The following was written by Teddy Goldsmith, and it's a transcript of a talk that he gave on February 2nd, 1998, at the Religion and Environment Education Program Conference for Bishops and Theologians, chaired by the Bishop of London. It was published in Fourth World Review in 1998. The title, The Cosmic Covenant, begins with a definition. Freedom, the right of a particular form of life to lead the life that it was designed to lead by its evolution or creation, and also, in the case of the human species, by its cultural upbringing. So again, freedom, the right of a particular form of life to lead the life that it was designed to lead by its evolution or creation, and also, in the case of the human species, by its cultural upbringing. The environmental problems we face today, such as the destruction of the world's forests, the drainage of its wetlands, the pollution of its groundwaters, rivers, estuaries, seas, the erosion, compaction, and desertification of its agricultural lands, the chemicalization of just about everything, and of course global climate change, the problem that dwarfs them all, are not unrelated. They form a veritable syndrome, and what is important, they are the inevitable consequences of the policies that we apply, all of which are designed to contribute to the overriding policy of promoting massive, uncontrollable economic development that we identify with progress. Unfortunately, we believe quasi-religiously in economic development. It underlies the worldview of modernism, of the secular religion of today, which is, unfortunately, the source of all of our problems. Underlying the worldview of this secular religion is the fundamental assumption that the world is badly designed. God did a bad job, and it is incumbent on man, armed as he is with all his sciences, technology, and industry and free trade, to transform it in accordance with his vastly superior design. To a truly religious person, this dogma should clearly be seen as the ultimate blasphemy, yet few people see it that way. Nearly everyone today seems to accept the preposterous view that modern man is actually improving the world, making it a better place to live in, against, I might add, all the evidence to the contrary that is accumulating by the minute. Of course, people still pay lip service to a transcendental religion in our part of the world, to some form of Christianity, but it is indeed only lip service that they pay to it. The real religion with which they have been imbued since their most tender childhood is the secular religion of progress. In any case, modern Christianity, like most modern mainstream religions, has changed very considerably over the years. From serving above all to link people together, to the whole creation, and to the Creator, as etymologically the term originally implied, it has become little more than a bipolar relationship between an asocial, an ecological, that's anti-ecological man, and a God who seems to share the same characteristics. Something must be done about this if life is to regain its meaning, and also if we are to survive very much longer on this beleaguered planet. The two main speakers this morning have showed us that originally ancient Judaism, as well as early Christianity, did serve to bind man to the whole of creation and to the Creator himself. But the original theology has been perverted and must be reconstituted, which means returning to our roots so that religion can once more fulfill its original role and spearhead the shift toward a less destructive way of life. To say, as the Metropolitan John of Pergamon, among others, has done, that the destruction of the environment is a sin, is not by itself sufficient. People can only understand and believe that it is a sin, indeed the ultimate sin, if this notion is totally consistent with the theology that sees the preservation of the creation as man's overriding duty, as we have been shown today was the case in the early Judeo-Christian tradition. Also, we must realize that if to destroy the environment is a sin, then development can no longer be the acceptable goal of governmental policy. Of course, it is every type of development that I am referring to. In the last 30 years, since I have been involved in the environmental movement, I have heard over and over again that the sort of destructive development we have had so far is not real development. The developmental process has been mismanaged, we are told. We must do it properly. What we need is a new sort of development, the rural development of McNamara when he was president of the World Bank. the eco-development of Maurice Strong when he ran the United Nations Environment Development Program, the intermediate development of Dr. Schumacher, or the integrated development, which at one time was all the rage. Of course, today, it is sustainable development that is supposed to provide a panacea to all our problems. However, nothing has changed. If anything, development has become even more socially and ecologically destructive and morally repulsive, especially with the development of the global economy that, in effect, globalizes this immoral and destructive process. Development has become even more socially and ecologically destructive and morally repulsive, especially with the development of the global economy that, in effect, globalizes this immoral and destructive process. The second point I want to make is that this process is now completely out of control. I do not see anything in place that can conceivably stop the continued destruction of the world's forests until there are no accessible forests left, or rather, until it has become uneconomic to cut down any more. There is no law anywhere to prevent corporations from clear-cutting forests or draining wetlands or generating greenhouse gases that must inevitably destabilize the world's climate. I'm going to read that paragraph again. The second point I want to make is that this process is now completely out of control. I do not see anything in place that can conceivably stop the continued destruction of the world's forests until there are no accessible forests left, or rather, until it has become uneconomic to cut down any more. There is no law anywhere to prevent corporations from clear-cutting forests or draining wetlands or generating greenhouse gases that must inevitably destabilize the world's climate. What is more, even if any such laws to be enacted, there is no possible mechanism for implementing them, especially as it is in the immediate interests of governments to collude with the corporations responsible for the destruction, as it will temporarily, at least, increase their tax income, while providing many of their members with often massive kickbacks. Worse still, with the signing of the GATT-Uruguay Rounds Agreement, any such laws would almost certainly be classified as non-tariff barriers and judged illegal by secret panels of the World Trade Organization. What is more, if the Multilateral Agreements on Investments, the MAI, is signed, such laws would be even more obviously illegal. This shameful agreement would in effect make it illegal for any government to pass a law that reduces the profit of a corporation. In anticipation of the signing of this agreement, the Ethel Corporation of America is actually suing the Canadian government for $250 million because it refuses to let them sell in Canada a toxic additive to petrol that would apparently reduce their profits by that amount. The third point I want to make is that if current destructive trends persist for long enough, and they do not have to persist for very long, 40, 50, 60, at the most 100 years, or even more, our even more degraded world will have ceased to be capable of supporting complex forms of life, and we will almost certainly become extinct as a species. Fortunately, it is unlikely that they will continue that long. Something will bring them to an end. But let's be realistic. That something, whatever it is, will almost certainly not be an intelligent and responsible decision taken by a government anywhere in the world. It would not be politically expedient for them to take such decisions. For their precious political careers would come to an abrupt end if they even made the most tentative suggestions that the requisite decisions should be made. In effect, we have delegated the solution to our problems to disasters of different sorts, economic disasters, social disasters, and of course, ecological and climatic disasters, if the others do not occur first. Having said this, it is quite clear that today there is no cosmetic solutions to our problems. It is too late to fiddle around with things. We're past that stage. If all today's social and ecological trends lead to catastrophe, quite obviously the only responsible course of action is to reverse these trends, and reverse them very quickly indeed. If today's policy is to create a global economy totally controlled by vast, uncontrollable, and socially and ecologically irresponsible transnational corporations catering for the world market, we must instead create a network of loosely connected local economies, largely in the hands of small and medium-sized companies that are integral parts of local communities and societies, and for whose welfare they feel deeply responsible. I'll say that again. If today's policy is to create a global economy totally controlled by vast, uncontrollable, and socially and ecologically irresponsible transnational corporations catering for the world market, we must instead create a network of loosely connected local economies, largely in the hands of small and medium-sized companies that are integral parts of local communities and societies, and whose welfare they feel deeply responsible. It is only in this way that we can reduce the impact of our economic activities on an environment that cannot sustain the present impact, an impact that we are still busily trying to increase by globalizing the economy and making it ever more dependent on the use of highly destructive new technologies such as genetic engineering. It is only in this way, too, that we can conceivably provide people with jobs or other means of assuring their livelihood. For even today, it is the small and medium-sized companies that provide the bulk of available jobs. The transnationals, in spite of all their hype, providing but an insignificant portion of those that are available today. What is more, it is also only in this way that we can create the economic infrastructure for renewed families and communities, which the global economy cannot conceivably do. We need to move in this direction for yet another reason. This morning, we all agreed that it was only within the context of a cosmic or ecological religion, where early Judaism and early Christianity once were, that people can be made to realize that the destruction of God's creation is a sin, the ultimate sin. Unfortunately, an atomized mass society such as ours, made up of alienated people for whom the object of life is little more than immediate self-gratification, and that is organized into totally artificial, surrogate social groupings, such as governmental institutions and commercial corporations, cannot conceivably be imbued with this sort of religion. Let us not forget that the main feature of a cosmic religion is its accentuation of man's obligations to society, the natural world, and the all-encompassing cosmos itself. There's no point preaching such a religion to people who have been taught that obligations of any kind are but unacceptable constraints on their individual freedom. Nor are such people likely to accept these ideas if they have been taught from their earliest childhood that the God they worship has little concern for the fate of society, the natural world, and the cosmos. I'll read that paragraph again. Let us not forget that the main feature of a cosmic religion is its accentuation of man's obligations to society, the natural world, and the all-encompassing cosmos itself. There is no point preaching such a religion to people who have been taught that obligations of any kind are but unacceptable constraints on their individual so-called freedom. Nor are such people likely to accept these ideas if they have been taught from their earliest childhood that the God they worship has little concern for the fate of society, the natural world, and the cosmos. Unfortunately, it is by imbuing people with these utterly irresponsible ideas that we maximize the immediate interests of the large transnational corporations that control the global economy we have institutionalized in the last few years. Fortunately, this global economy cannot last for long. It is organized in such a way and is at the same time so highly automated that it could probably function with less than 20% of the world's workforce, thereby marginalizing 80% of humanity, something which is impossible to do without creating unparalleled human misery and all sorts of social conflicts. In addition, it is inherently unstable, as the South American economic crisis of the early 80s, the Mexican economic crisis 5 years ago in 1993, and now the economic crises in the Far East, Russia, Mexico, Brazil, India, and Pakistan all make clear. It seems but a question of time before the world economy undergoes a similar fate and we are faced with global economic collapse. Whether this occurs or not, a vast proportion of humanity will in any case be forced to fend for itself outside the formal economy, which means developing an elaborate informal economy which will dwarf in size and importance the formal economy itself that we have now globalized. This will give rise to terrible chaos and human misery, but it must also spell a slow and piecemeal return to a society that is organized once more into family and community groupings, in which economic activity is on a very much smaller scale and caters for, at most, local and regional markets. We must realize that it is in such societies that we have spent possibly as much as 95% of our tenancy of this planet. It is only in this sort of society that people are likely to feel a sense of obligation towards the world around them. The only sort of society that can possibly be imbued with the sort of cosmic religion that Father Murray, Margaret Baker, and Professor Nasser talked about this morning. One might go so far as to say such a society is a natural one for humans to live in. As one might add, a cosmic or ecological religion is the natural one for humans to be imbued with. Indeed, it has been shown by a succession of our classical anthropologists, Ralph Linfon, Melford Spiro, George Peter Murdoch, etc., that the family and the community have provided the basis of human society throughout the traditional world. There's no real exception to this rule. The key idea that man's welfare is assured not by maximizing gross national product, but on the contrary, by preserving the critical order of society, the natural world, and the all-encompassing cosmos, is equally natural to our species. The key idea that man's welfare is assured not by maximizing gross national product, but on the contrary, by preserving the critical order of society, the natural world, and the all-encompassing cosmos is equally natural to our species. Mircea Eliade and other great students of religion have shown how most of the rituals performed by traditional peoples served above all to maintain the cosmic order. In many societies, in fact, the word existed for the path that had to be taken in order to do so. The Tao of the ancient Chinese, the Rita of the Vedic Indians, the Asha of the Avestas, the Mat of the ancient Egyptians, and as Father Murray and Margaret Baker made clear in their writings, the Sedque of the ancient Hebrews. By following this path, one maintained the harmony between heaven and earth, the original meaning of shalom, cosmic order, in fact. This was also the path of justice, and it was by following it that one observed at the same time the moral law, the divine law, and the cosmic law. Again, this path, or the way, was also the path of justice, and it was following it that one observed at the same time the moral law, the divine law, and the cosmic law. There was seen to be no distinction between the law governing society, the nomos of the Greeks, that which governed the natural world itself, usually referred to by Greeks as dike, or D-I-K-E, and that which governed the all-embracing world of the gods, usually referred to as themis. What a contrast with modern man's view of law. It is worth noting that today our law serves, above all, to protect private property, and one could destroy the living world and make our very species extinct without violating a single one of the laws that we have enacted. What an indictment of the worldview that our law so faithfully reflects. As we return to a natural society, I think that the bulk of people will realize that the modern world that they have left behind was little more than a terrible aberration. It may have provided us with a mass of ingenious gadgetry and undoubtedly with all sorts of comforts which were unknown to those in the traditional world, but it has also made a very large number of people very miserable indeed, for it has deprived them of the most important things in life. The great Indian thinker, Krishna Chaitanya, C-H-A-I-T-A-N-I-A, who died 2 years ago, defined that much abused term freedom as the right of a particular form of life to lead the life that it was designed to lead by its evolution or creation, and also in the case of the human species, by its cultural upbringing. It is this, the ultimate freedom, that we have been increasingly deprived of in modern times, and no amount of ingenious gadgetry can compensate for this. We have always lived as members of families and communities, bound together with the natural world and the cosmos by a cosmic tradition and religion. Again, we've always lived as members of families and communities, bound together with the natural world and the cosmos by a cosmic tradition and religion. For me, this must be man's natural state, and it must be that which best satisfies his real needs and at the same time, of course, those of society, of the natural world, and of the cosmos. If we are to have a future, we must abandon the illusion of scientific, technical, and industrial progress, which can only lead to global catastrophe. And though we cannot recreate the past, it is a world that displays its principal features that we must seek to create. Man is naturally a religious being. It is not religion, as Karl Marx insisted, but materialism that is the opiate of the people. Again, man is naturally a religious being. It's not religion, as Karl Marx insisted, but materialism that is the opiate of the people. What is more, religion is even today a powerful force, and could be very much more so, if it were seen by the public as at large as providing the very basis of the worldview with which we must all be imbued if we are to survive on this beleaguered planet. Okay, say it again. Religion is even today a powerful force and could be much, very much more so if it were seen by the public at large as providing the very basis of the worldview with which we must all be imbued if we are to survive on this beleaguered planet. Hence, the critical importance of reviving the largely forgotten cosmic roots of the Judeo-Christian tradition, and indeed, of the other mainstream religious traditions of today. Yeah, Michael, you bet your ass I'm looking at you.